This is the UVic Military Oral History Program, interviewed with John Innes, recorded on March 12, 2012, at his home in Saanich, interviewed by Kaylee Marr. Now, Mr. Innes, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes, you do.
Wonderful. Now, if you could please begin by providing me with both your given name and your surname.
John Marshall Innes, 1656 Teakwood.
Perfect.
I was born on August the 2nd, 1922. I joined the Army in 1942.
Wonderful. And can you please begin by just telling me a little bit about your life before the war broke out?
Well, before the war, I was hoping to be a great hockey player.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I played hockey in Winnipeg, right from the junior to juvenile, all the way up to junior and into the senior class. Then I joined the service. I worked at a warehouse in Winnipeg, and I was very fortunate when I came back from the war to be able to go back to my old job. However, I went on from there.
Okay. Now, when you first found out that the war had broken out, where in Canada were you living?
In Winnipeg.
Winnipeg? Okay. And what was your reaction when you found out the war had broken out?
Well, I was pretty young then. I guess we wasn't thinking too much about what was going on in the war. As the war went on, then we did a little more thinking.
Sure. And what made you decide to enlist?
Well, that was families of four of us in on Winnipeg on Rupert Street, and we all decided to join the service. The other family was Zebulonsky, the Inneses, and the Harrisons. And we all went down and we joined the service. Went out and bought a bottle of Catawba wine and never got so drunk in all my life.
Now, you mentioned in your previous interview that you originally tried for the Navy, was it?
I did try for Navy. I did try for an Air Force. But obviously my qualifications did not suit.
So how did you feel when you were enlisted into the Army?
Not just like anybody else, I guess. I have no reaction.
So you weren't too upset about...
No, not at all.
All right. So during after your enlistment, when did you discover that you would be trained in gunnery and radio operation for the tanks?
Well, when I was born, I was recruited in Winnipeg. I was then transferred to Portage-la Prairie. In Portage-la Prairie, I had my basic training. And that was in so many little pieces of paper here. Yeah, I went to Portage-la Prairie for my basic training. While I was there, halfway through my training, they advised me that they asked me if I played any sports. I said, yes, I'm a hockey player. Good. Then I played for the CACRU team, or that is the team for 4 months all winter. So along with my basic training, I played hockey for the people in Portage-la Prairie. Finally, they caught up to me and sent me off to Borden, where I then took my advanced training to become a gunner operator, not knowing what I was going to end up as. Okay?
All right.
So from that point on, I was then had finished my basic training in Borden with the gunner operator, who had to do wireless operating, radio, and gunnery. That was my job. Then they send me out to Debert, Nova Scotia, which is a jumping off point to go overseas. My group, people I was with, were sent to the Queen Mary And we were on guard there for 2 to 3 weeks while Queen Mary was being refitted. Okay? Then overseas, on the same boat, and I ended up in Aldershot, where I continued my training. Again, I was a pretty good hockey player. I found out that they had wanted some hockey players, so I played hockey in Purley, Brighton, and in Scotland. And once again, they caught up with me. And first thing you know, I was recruited and forwarded to a location which I can't remember. I'd get on a troop ship and didn't know where we were going at the time until we got in the Mediterranean.
And is that when you found out you would be
going to the Mediterranean. So we arrived in Naples. Naples at that time, the harbor was absolutely a mess. It was really bombed out. So then we all ended up in boxcars, believe it or not. That was our mode of travel to a place called Avellino. Avellino was sort of the recruiting location where all of us got together, and then they would sort you out if you're infantry, military, or whatever the case would be. I happened to be I didn't know exactly where I was going, when I was going, but I ended up in a place called Benevento. And that's when I was recruited to the RCDs. Royal Canadian Dragoons. Up to that point, I had no idea. So my job then was a gunner operator. Operated the tank. It's a 14-ton armored car called
Would that have been I think I might have the name here. Was that the Staghound?
Staghound.
Yeah. Now, when you first arrived in Italy, can you just describe some of the ways that your training in Canada had sort of prepared you for when you arrived there?
Well, when I arrived, I had no idea where, what, where, and why. I had no idea. And then all of a sudden, one day, they said, okay, you're going off to Benevento. You're going to join the Royal Canadian Dragoons as the thing you were trained for. Gunner operator. So I operated the radio and the gunner, and the other that we had, that the our crew consisted of a driver, myself, and a lieutenant. The lieutenant's name was Carrigan. The driver was, I got it somewhere down, written down, but anyhow, that was our then. From that point on, we took more training because the cars were brand new. They had no vehicles up to that point. In other words, they were American Staghounds, and they had to bring them in and retrain us in the units itself. So we did that all in Benevento. Then, I guess when the time came, they said, you're going to move up now as support for the infantry, C4th, PPCLI, RCRs, and many others. So that's when. I'm going into battle. Well, I can honestly tell you that I was never so scared in all my life. Because the two things that they had were very effective tools. The 88 gun, and they the thing that they had that scared the life out of us was what they called the Moaning Minnie. Now, Moaning Minnie was a gun that had several slots in it, where they all landed in different places. So one were here, one were there, over here, there. You never knew where they were going to be. But you could hear them coming. They were screaming at you, coming at you. So I was a pretty scared guy. I can still remember that first night. I was sitting there with my with a shell in my hand, ready for anything to come up. And then in the morning when the troops moved ahead, we were going up the Leary Valley. The Leary Valley, beautiful place. At night I could remember the magnificence of the fireflies. They were just all over the place. Super great to watch. But as I say, in the morning, with no sleep or none, my hands, I could not hold a cup of coffee. I could not, because of the strain of hanging onto a shell and being prepared for whatever might be. So the driver was sitting there, and the officer, we were all in the same boat. Somebody offered us a mess tin of tea. Okay, so that was our first one. Then that was the daytime, and then we moved along slowly. Beautiful orchards all over, olive trees, and just the Leary Valley were beautiful going all the way up. And how far up, I can't tell you, but to a location where we finally stopped. And our destination at that time was, I believe, Casino. But prior to that, we left the Leary Valley, which is still in the Leary Valley. We went to Caserta, Frosinone, this is going all the way up to the main highway. Frosinone did that, and we were now on the main road in Frosinone to Rome. Well, we at that point in time, I didn't know anything about it, but a Victoria Cross was given to a group. A soldier, I should say, at a place, and I have some pictures of it. Casa
Berardi.
Now that was the wall. That was the wall that they were at.
And do you know what they received the cross for?
Victoria Cross for bravery of crossing the river and taking that little town. It's all it was, just a little town. I stopped there during my trip, and they explained a little bit to us about what went on. But that's the plaque that's there. No, that's all it is. I thought I had another picture.
That's all right. So now, during your advance up the...
No, now we're at the main highway.
Okay.
To Rome. And we're 54 kilometers to Rome. So, like all the service people, the top brass knew what was going on, but we sure as heck didn't. And all of a sudden, they said, you're now going to go east, not west. We'll let the Americans and the French and took Rome over, okay? So then we traveled from there, and I mean through more mountains, and always with our backs to the wall, so to speak, because Jerry, as the Germans, all had the advantage over us. Because we're coming up the mountains, and they're seeing us come up the mountains. So it was, it took us about, I would say, almost 3 weeks from that location to get close to Casino. And when we got to Casino, it was absolutely devastated. There was nothing left. Bulldozers, the only way we could get bulldozers to clear away or to get through Casino. Then for Casino, then we went farther east to the coast. Now, it's summertime, so our vehicles are usable on the roads. Come September, October, the rainy season, we became infantry.
Now, can you describe to me a little bit about what it was like to go from being a tank movement until to all of a sudden having to adapt to an infantry position?
The difference there was the fact that we had A, B, C, and D squadrons. And each had a squadron of, say, 30 people or more. I can't quite remember. But our infantry then, A would move up to a house, take over. B then would take over from them, and C on, and so on and so forth. That was our way we operated in infantry. My closest place, we were at a river crossing, and we were in a house, and I was the OP, or the observant position, up on the top. And I never saw the tank, I never heard the tank, and they blew the top off the house. So I was a pretty scared guy, and all the rest of them in the house were the same way, because now I don't know where the next group were. They were behind us, naturally, because they were going to move up. And that guy, I'm telling you, he notched up there and put himself in a position. It was a tank with an 88 gun on it. Well, then we kept moving along. We're now still soldiering, because I guess, I can't remember, this would be September or October or whatever the case may be. Now I'm in Italy almost a year now. And we kept going on a very, very slow case up the coast, all up the coast. Then spring come along, and we're back in our cars. By this time, we're in our cars now, and we're coming up the east coast to Alcona, San Marino, which is a country all to itself, and. We took that place. Behind us was the Polish regiment. And our next stop was a place called Rimini. Now, we didn't know what was going on in Rimini, but we were going along the road, and we were strafed by our own airplanes. Straight by our own airplanes. We had the yellow smoke. By the time you threw it up, they were 1,000 miles away. And when they come back again, we threw it up. But they still didn't hurt anybody, but sure scared the heck out of us. Now, between San Marino and Rimini, there was a huge hill on the left-hand side. We're on the road going towards Rimini. All of a sudden, we could smell something terrible. So the officer, now I'm in an armored car now, and the officer said, well, we better just have a look at that thing. Well, when we went over that hill, there must have been 10 to 12 tanks, all British tanks, all smoking and all knocked out. But we never saw any of the Germans, never saw any. They had moved on. So we then went on and to Rimini. And very quietly, we rolled into Rimini. There was not a soul around. And we stayed in there for a short period of time to regroup. All the ABCs and D squadrons were grouped. And we never got credit for taking Rimini. They give it to the Polish people, but that's okay. So then, I guess we still had our cars then for a short period of time. I can't tell you how long that would be or when the month was we were in Rimini. I didn't write down. But now we're going into my second year. Still with our cars. Then we lost the cars again, just after Rimini. And we were infantry then all the way up the coast to a place called Ravenna.
Now, when you had to become infantry like that, can you just maybe briefly discuss some of the equipment that you had at that time?
All our just rifles and our Sten guns. And we didn't even have pistols. We just had a rifle and Sten guns. And we would go along and find a nice quiet barn. And then we'd have to we'd have to dig a trench, because you have to guard that barn while the rest of the guys are sleeping. Two or three hours, and then out again, then into the barn. That's the time you can see almost everything in your life passing in front of you, believe me. And then we would move on. Haystacks were always a concern to us, never knowing if there would be anybody built themselves into the haystacks. So we were always cautious, and then we'd fire a few shots into them and to scare if anybody was coming.
What did you have for food?
Food we had rations that were brought up to us. Tins, hard bread, tea, if you had some place to put it. We always had a thermos of wine in our pocket in Italy. I swore that I would never drink wine, but we had an awful lot of it. So then we kept on moving up as infantry. Just outside of Ravenna. And we stopped for a little while there because we knew Jerry was very close. He said, by that time, you see, we're about 50 or 60 miles from Venice. Now, we're stuck in the mud. We're stuck, absolutely stuck in the mud. Now, we stopped at a place called Lugo. And Lugo was on a river. And we were on one side of the river, and Jerry was on the other side. And I remember that's where we spent a Christmas, in Lugo. And I can still remember Jerry singing the Christmas songs at Christmas time. So we were there we had Christmas there, and dinner was brought up to us for some reason. We got dinner, I remember that. And I guess it was, two or three weeks or longer there, because the weather was just absolutely terrible. So Jerry wasn't moving and we weren't moving. I remember going into Lugo, going over the bridge, and the officer said, it's too quiet, back up. So we backed up into the little town of Lugo. And by golly, I guess 24 hours or later that, Jerry blew the bridge up.
Oh my goodness. So,
nobody was going anywhere for a little while. So as I say, we were there then to Lugo. Now that's as far as I went in Italy. Then one day they called us back, and the British Army took over from us in that location. And I can't remember, we came back, I believe, to Rimini and picked up our vehicles. Because it was a good road in there, in Rimini, it was pretty safe. And then they told us that, we're going to drive from Rimini to the port of Leghorn. Leghorn then to, and the U.S., what they call them, barges that carried tanks and so on.
Oh, okay.
So that's what they put us on, that tanks, and then we we down to the Mediterranean and came up to Marseilles.
So from there, where did you go once you had arrived in Marseille?
Well, once we arrived in Los Tres, we regrouped once again. We all had medicals, and they throw powders up your legs and so on, delouse you, you know, if you got any things. And it took us about, a couple of weeks. To sound like an awful lot, but to get up to, where was it? Belgium, Holland, and then into Holland, we stopped at a place called Apeldoorn. Apeldoorn was sort of the recruiting area for that time for people. So then we got introduced to a different type of fighting, a different type of war.
Can you describe that to me a little bit?
Well, we had our tanks then. The roads were that good, and by that time, half of Holland was already taken up. Now, and I have a map somewhere with my name of the little place. We're going down the road recruiting. Nobody in minding our own business. We happen to be the lead tank, and quiet little town, and some army guy was in a trench behind a hedge, and he hit our tank with a what we call a Piat gun. I don't know what they call, but what it is, it hits the tank and burns its way through it, and then there's a great explosion.
I believe it's a Panzerfaust, but I could be wrong.
I don't know for sure. But anyhow, all the troops and all the cars behind us thought we had disintegrated. That's the way it looked. Fortunately, the officer and myself, they killed the driver. The officer and myself were half out of the tank, and anything that was available was burnt. Bless my mustache, eyebrows, anything in my hands, all was burnt. And this is when it caught by one of my eyes. This is why today I have a pension, because of that. So, and we lost everything in our tank. So the officer and myself were sent back to a hospital, I believe in Apeldoorn, but I can't be sure. And we were there for about, 2 or 3 weeks, recuperating, while the rest of our group were kept on moving up. I say I was tired. From that point on, it was about 3 weeks in the hospital, and back again to join them up. And I didn't get very far because just about 2 weeks after I joined them again, I was in Germany. And next thing you know, the armistice was on.
Yeah. So during the three weeks that you were hospitalized, did you feel as though you were missing out on what potentially might be?
Well, I was glad to be away from it all.
Yeah.
You know, you just never know. Yes, I sort of missed it, but I regret not getting more information from the from my troops and so on and people. But I was glad to get out of the service, come home, get my old job back again. And I was very fortunate to get an application through a friend of mine who was already in the company, and get 1943, I started with Air Canada. I ended up here as the customer service manager.
So how did it feel to return home after the war? How was
relieved.
Your life? Yeah.
I think relieved. Relieved, and saying to myself, I was one of the lucky ones, because there was lots of them who were not lucky. I still say that today. I'm lucky as heck to be still alive.
Now, I know many historians discuss how the soldiers who served in Italy were nicknamed the D-Day Dodgers.
That's right.
How did you feel about being called such a thing?
Well, I didn't know anything about
that. No?
You didn't know anything about that. Now, where's that paper? No, just a minute. I forgot about that. You get a kick out of that, I think.
Find it after the interview if you like, if that's easier.
Okay.
Sure. So now, reflecting on the war, some historians believe that the Canadian Army equipment and the tank equipment sort of left some to be desired, especially with regards to the Italy campaign. How do you feel about that?
I don't follow your thinking there. What is it?
Well, some historians sort of criticize the equipment that was used during the Italian campaign. For instance, the Staghounds, the Dingo Scout cars, that sort of thing. So how do you feel reflecting on
it? I thought the Staghounds were excellent.
Yeah.
But useless because they were no good in mud. I was in a couple of them with a hit of mine, blew the wheel off. But the rest of the tank was good. They were very rarely unserviceable. The Staghounds, the little Daimler, which was the English scout car, was a beautiful vehicle. It could go as fast backwards as frontwards. Ours was a Ford scout car. They were out front of us sometimes, maybe half, quarter of a mile away or within communication. The equipment, I'm very disappointed in the Sten gun.
Yeah.
You never knew if it was going to fire or not. But we all had the trifle, the training with the rifle. So I know, I personally, the equipment that I had was good. The radio service was good, and the tanks, they were good. They worked when you want them to.
Now, do you feel as though your training in Canada prepared you for sort of what you experienced in Italy, sort of with regards to the weather conditions and that sort of thing?
No.
No?
No. You have to go through it. No. You have no idea. You have no idea.
So now, when you sort of look back on what you experienced, do you have sort of any memories that stick out as the fondest?
Well, my memories is what you're getting, I think I've given you a pretty good one.
You certainly have.
But I'm sure there's other things that I've forgotten to tell you, but.
Well, that's all right. Well, Mr. Innes, I believe that's everything that I had intended to ask you, but is there anything that you would like to add or suggest or anything at the end of this interview?
No, I'm just hoping that the tape there will be serviceable so I can see what I've said.
Certainly.
And you've heard the tape. Now, how far am I away?
You're very, very accurate, actually, to what you said.
Pretty darn close.
Yes. Right? Yes, definitely.
That's not bad for an old guy.
No, not at all.
No.
All right. Well, this concludes the Military Oral History Program interview with John Innes. Now, Mr. Innes, if you could just please take a moment and just sign this consent form here, that would be wonderful. Just your name right there. Oh, sorry, end up here.
Here?
Yes.
Two places?
That one you don't need to sign. You can just write, but that's okay. Perfect. And I will sign my name right here. All and we've both signed the consent form, is that correct?
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, Mr. Innes, I'd just like to thank you very much for participating in the UVic program once again, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.